Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have updates on the spread of coronavirus and a story on the conflicts between growing numbers of grizzly bears and ranchers. It's Monday, March 23rd. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl.
With Montana News, I'm Corin Cades-Carney.
And I'm Nikki Ouellette. Corin, over the weekend, Montana doubled its number of confirmed COVID-19 patients.
Confirmed cases are now in urban and rural counties. There's some evidence of spread from the Board of Regents meeting in Dillon earlier this month, which was attended by more than 100 people. And Gallatin County officials say 4 new patients with no known travel history, which makes them think it's community spread.
The Montana Nurses Association is calling for Governor Steve Bullock to order Montanans to stay at home.
Nikki, if you could break down why they say this is needed. This would be on top of current school closures, and other public indoor spaces are already closed for a week, though it's likely that order could be expanded.
Right, and public health officials applaud those measures, but Vicki Bird with the Montana Nurses Association says it's not enough. She says the state hasn't conducted enough tests to really understand where the virus is or how it's spreading through the community. So state and local hospitals have been in touch with each other about the amount of tests the state has and the amount of protective gear they have, but there aren't enough test kits nationwide to do the kind of diagnostic testing we've seen in places like South Korea.
The state medical officer said last week that Montana has enough tests, and he says testing doesn't really help individual patients. It's mostly used for epidemiologists to find out where the virus is in the state.
There's no known treatment for COVID-19, so it really doesn't change how a doctor is going to care for an individual person if they test positive. Jeff Jaden is with Kalispell Regional Healthcare, and he was speaking at a press conference earlier this weekend.
The question comes often, should we treat people that don't have any symptoms? And I think the answer to that now is no, because you test them and then they get reassurance that they may not have the virus. But that's not to say that they're not in contact or they get the virus several minutes later or an hour later or those. So I think those criteria will evolve with time.
Cases of COVID-19 are currently reported in around a dozen counties. Health officials are really stressing the importance of mitigation, and there are things we can do to limit the spread and not pressure the healthcare system.
And we'll just say again, those things are social distancing, so keeping 6 feet between you and the next person, staying home if you're sick, and washing your hands frequently, as long as it takes you to sing happy birthday twice. One of the other ways that the healthcare system could be pressured is if healthcare workers themselves contract the virus, and that has happened. Kalispell Regional Healthcare reported that one of their employees, who's a man in his 30s, came back to work after traveling, and he potentially exposed 14 patients and 9 of his coworkers. All of them are in self-quarantine, and Kalispell Regional is working with the public health department to track down contacts.
And that wasn't the only healthcare worker in Montana to test positive for the virus in recent days. In Yellowstone County, 2 healthcare workers have tested positive. A detention center guard also tested positive in Yellowstone.
And that led John Felton, Yellowstone County's public health officer, to extend the business closure order that he had set earlier last week. It's now in effect until April 10th. And he says shutting things down and keeping people spread apart is really the only way to limit the spread of the virus.
The question really isn't, do we have enough beds and ICU beds and personal protective equipment for today? The real question is, how do we have enough to last through the long term? And the answer to that is we have got to slow down the spread of infection.
And so to create more social distancing to slow the spread, public health officials have called for many businesses where people tend to gather, like bars and restaurants, to close. And those closures have really led to a rise in unemployment.
I know that some of the requirements for unemployment were relaxed last week to reduce typical waiting periods, and now people who are laid off during the closures can apply. How big of an increase did we see, Corin?
The day after changes were announced to the state's unemployment benefits to now include people laid off because of the virus or maybe now they're taking care of a sick family member, around 2,800 people filed a claim for unemployment. That was a Wednesday. For comparison, the previous Wednesday, before there was a case of COVID-19 reported in Montana, just 57 people filed a claim for unemployment.
Holy cow, so just in that one day.
Yeah, the site was crashing a bit last week, off and on. Officials say they've got all hands on deck now, and it's running, but they still warn there could be some lag time.
We've got one other kind of tech update. The state health department is changing how it alerts people about new cases.
There's a new website with a map showing how many cases are in each county, and it updates daily when the state lab results come in.
For those of you who might be counting along at home, the numbers might be a little bit different. That's because local hospitals are now receiving test results from two private labs out of state. So sometimes counties are reporting details of new cases before the state does. So there's going to be a bit of discrepancy.
Nikki, why is it important or why is it helpful for people to know how many new cases there are and where they are in Montana?
It shows us that the number of positive patients in Montana is just starting to ramp up. Health officials say Montana's a little behind the curve compared to other states with our rise in case numbers, and we can learn from their response. It seems like some of the closures and the social distancing messaging that have been pushed over the past week have come here sooner than other states have instituted them. But this jumpstart only really works if people actually social distance, wash their hands, stay home if they're sick, that kind of thing.
Nikki, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Corin.
Health officials are warning there is evidence that the coronavirus has been spreading within southwestern Montana's Gallatin County. They are stressing the need for the public to take precautions to prevent more people from being exposed to it. Unlike the county's first four cases of the coronavirus, the four people confirmed to have COVID-19 on Saturday have no known source of infection. The Gallatin City County Health Department says they had no known travel history, exposure to someone who traveled, or exposure to other known COVID-19 cases. The department says all four have had mild symptoms and have been isolated. Those who had close contact with them have also been quarantined. Montana's individual income tax filing deadline has been pushed back to July 15th in line with the new federal filing guidelines. Montana Governor Steve Bullock said on an afternoon press call, the Montana Department of Revenue will be lenient and will work with taxpayers on an individual basis.
Extending the deadline will give taxpayers breathing room without having to worry about interest or penalties.
The three-month tax filing extension comes amid government-mandated business closures in response to the coronavirus pandemic. The Montana Nurses Association is calling on Governor Steve Bullock to order residents to stay at home and close non-essential businesses until further notice. Association CEO Vicki Bird wrote on Facebook Friday she's making the request after hearing from nurses from other impacted states. She says Montana does not have the testing ability to accurately understand the virus or its spread through communities. She says critical supplies are lacking. Earlier last week, the state's top medical officer said Montana is doing the testing that should be done, and the state has enough COVID-19 tests. Bird's request comes as public health officials urge Montanans to limit their social contact to slow the virus's spread. Public health officials are reiterating their call for Montanans to practice social distancing and slow the spread of the novel coronavirus. The virus is now appearing in rural counties. County health officials believe some of the new cases were transmitted in-state. Healthcare workers in two counties are positive. Dr. Jeff Jaden is an infectious disease physician at Kalispell Regional Healthcare.
We're still really understanding this virus and the transmission and the asymptomatic transmission. So really the importance of social distancing, avoiding close contact within 6 feet of individuals.
Jaden says a healthcare worker at Kalispell Regional recently tested positive for COVID-19. He says that the worker came in contact with 14 patients and 9 employees. All are in quarantine. Two healthcare workers and a detention center officer in Yellowstone County have also tested positive. On the heels of a couple of states announcing they're going to postpone or heavily change how they run primary elections, Montana Secretary of State Corey Stapleton says he's taking a wait-and-see approach.
We're listening to the health experts and what they project over the weeks and months to come. We're watching what the other states have done or are doing. And yes, we're looking at the federal government to see if they provide insight or direction.
Alex Sack-Arson has been reporting on how Montana election officials are preparing for both the upcoming primary and the novel coronavirus for Montana Free Press. He sat down with Nikki Ouellette.
Alex, thanks so much for sharing your reporting with us.
Absolutely. So I think the big question on everybody's mind is, will Montana still have a primary on June 2nd?
I think that's a good question, and I think there are a lot of people waiting for an answer on that point. As Secretary of State Stapleton, you know, mentioned in that Twitter message, this is still kind of up in the air, and I'm not sure if, you know, things are going to get postponed, or if we're going to be moving over to a mail-only ballot, or, you know, if things are going to go forward in the normal way that they go forward.
It sounds like county election officials are picking up a lot of this contingency planning. What kind of ideas are they tossing around to keep people healthy?
County election officials need to be prepared if we do go to a mail-only election for the primary. They need to have plans in place for that. If the polls do open, they need plans in place for that. And so there's this sort of staggered contingency planning. As far as their plans, if we do go ahead with our traditional polling place primary on June 2nd, they're, you know, updating their election judge training to include mitigation for the risk of transmission. They're ordering supplies to make sure they can wipe down all surfaces. I had asked the election administrator here in Missoula County, Bradley Seaman, specifically about pens, because those pens and those polling booths get picked up by a lot of people on election day.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, he hadn't really even thought about that. And they're maybe looking at a disposable pen situation where you cast your ballot and take your pen with you. Or you can take a pen with blue or black ink in yourself if you don't want to pick up a potentially communal pen. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
A lot of hidden costs to this next election then.
Yeah. It's that's an interesting question that we'll get an answer to down the road is exactly, you know, how much more these plans have cost county governments. I know that in Lewis and Clark County, election supervisor Audrey McHugh had told me that they spent an additional $2,000 on sanitizing supplies in addition to what they got from a third party vendor.
So in addition to like the equipment of voting, elections need a lot of volunteers to act as judges. And in Montana, a lot of those judges are in that really high risk over 60-year-old age group. What kind of precautions are election officials taking for them, or will they even show up?
You know, Audrey McHugh had mentioned that, you know, the average age of election judges in Lewis and Clark County is 65. So this is definitely a group of people who fall in that at-risk category. So, you know, McHugh had mentioned they're updating their election judge training, not just with an eye to, you know, mitigating potential transmission among voters, but to those election judges. They're here in Missoula County. Bradley Seaman mentioned that they're going to be using non-powdered latex gloves so that when voters hand over their photo IDs, there's not that risk of transmission from that little chunk of plastic. So when it comes to the mail side of things, the ballot stuffing, you know, particularly with like a lot of school elections happen, you know, in the state, at least here in Missoula County and Lewis and Clark County, by mail. And that involves staffers standing next to each other, stuffing ballots into envelopes. And they're trying to make sure that they can comply with that social distancing.
We've been hearing from public health officials to be kind of on high alert for coronavirus sometime into the next couple of months. And with Montana's primary not being until June 2nd, it's sort of questionable if we're still in the range of, you know, the full crush of the virus.
That June 2nd date is a little misleading. I mean, these decisions need to be made a little more quickly to make sure that everybody is ready and that there's no, you know, hiccups around the primary election. I mean, if we go to a mail-in only ballot for the primary election, then that's going to require increased staff to stuff those ballots into envelopes. It's going to require more time to get those ballots out to voters and get voters to return them. So, I mean, a lot of these decisions need to be made, you know, before May, so that these county election officials and election judges and everyone have time to pull this off.
And just to clarify, Montana at this point is not considering postponing its June 2nd primary.
No. There's no official word that Montana is making a move to postpone its June 2nd primary.
But as we know with coronavirus, everything changes, sometimes even before we can get news on the radio. So we'll keep you posted. Alex, thanks so much for sharing your reporting with us.
Hey, not a problem. Thanks for chatting with me about it.
That was Alex Sikarson of Montana Free Press speaking with Nikki Ouellette. Grizzly bears are repopulating areas of Montana that haven't seen them for decades, creating more conflicts between livestock, people, and bears. Some ranchers are learning they need to do something that doesn't come naturally: change how they live on the land. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports there are efforts in ranching communities to get their neighbors to buy in.
I have been to a lot of grizzly bear meetings.
As bears were hibernating in their dens this winter, the Blackfeet Stock Growers Association held a meeting in Shodo to provide a space for ranchers like Mark Hitchcock to talk about working alongside the growing number of grizzly bears on the Rocky Mountain front.
If the animals aren't there, our cattle aren't getting killed. If we can deal with the problem, we don't have to be refunded. I don't want to be.
The number of sheep, cattle, and other livestock killed by grizzlies in Montana is going up. And even though the state pays for some of those losses, ranchers say they face unseen costs, such as stressed cattle with lower pregnancy rates and end-of-season weights. Because of that, ranchers like Hitchcock can get fixated on how to reduce the number of bears. His daughter hopes to change that view slightly.
It's been a while since the wind wasn't blowing. We're supposed to get a storm, but...
Driving on a ranch near Valier in early February, Trina Bradley says she's seen bears on the front since she was a kid, but there are just more of them now.
But most of the time we just see where they've been, and those are the bears that we like to have here. The other ones are just in my yard, in my face.
Bradley steps out to open a gate to her calving pasture, where the soon-to-be-born calves will be at risk as bears come out of their dens in March and April. You wouldn't call Bradley a fan of grizzly bears, but she does hold a slightly different opinion than her dad and others on the front when it comes to what will happen when the threatened species is delisted from federal protections.
Another part of the challenge is convincing these people that even if they're delisted, they're not going to go away. They're not just going to disappear from the landscape. So
Bradley says ranchers need to live with that, and she wants that message to come from the Blackfeet Stock Growers Association, which is made up of ranchers rather than agency officials some may mistrust. Mike Madel is a grizzly bear biologist with Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and he says bears can now be seen past Interstate 15, which is 40 miles from the mountains. He says they're not just traveling there in the spring, summer, and fall.
Most bears do return to the Rocky Mountain front and excavate a den up high. There are some female grizzly bears that are starting to hibernate, dig dens, and hibernate out in those wild, remote, high plains and river bottom habitats.
Madel says there's a larger diversity of food sources on the plains, and because of that, this new generation of cubs will likely be more reproductive, accelerating the population's growth. Madel has worked to write grants to fund conflict mitigation tools for ranchers and farmers closer to the mountains for years. And he says the need is growing in outlying ranching and farming communities.
And it's really becoming part of an issue for us that I didn't have to deal with a lot, like providing farmers with bear-proof grain bin doors.
That's why FWP recently hired a grizzly bear conflict specialist to help Madel with the workload. He adds that rancher-led efforts like Bradley's will help get people reluctant to work with government agencies on board. Bradley agrees and says ranchers need to feel supported with education, but also with the cost of reducing bear conflicts.
Funding is always a huge barrier. You know, electric fencing costs money, dogs cost money, everything costs a lot of money, not just for the initial setup, but also for the maintenance. You know, you
Bradley and the Blackfeet Stock Growers Association have been holding meetings across the Rocky Mountain front, trying to convince ranchers focused on delisting to turn their attention to reducing run-ins with bears. But tools to do that are expensive. A trained guard dog could run $5,000 or more, and an electric fence around a calving lot can easily cost over $10,000, depending on the size. That price tag can be a huge turnoff to ranchers already having a hard time staying in the black. Bradley hopes the meetings will catapult efforts within the Stock Growers Association to compete for grant dollars from state and federal agencies and nonprofits. She's also asking ranchers to get out there and tell their stories in order to let the public know what they're dealing with.
Ranchers are very private people, and we don't want to talk about what's going on out here because it's nobody else's business. But it's to the point that we need to talk about it, and we need to tell our story.
The private land trust group, Heart of the Rockies Initiative, works to fund several local farming and ranching groups working on living with bears. Gary Burnett is the group's executive director.
And so let's move and try to figure out how to retain grizzly bear populations, but how to retain these livestock operations. Because I've heard landowners say this, that, you know, we can do both.
He says there are success stories of ranchers and bears coexisting. It's been happening in the Blackfoot Valley for years. On the Two Creek Ranch east of Ovando, members of local conservation groups and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service are working together to unwind and set up about a mile of flangery. It's an electrified wire with red flags attached to it, meant to scare wolves away, which ranch manager Wayne Slatt says is one of his main issues these days. He hasn't had a grizzly kill one of his cows for about 20 years.
When you get your first depredation, emotions are high. You're very upset with the world and you want to go kill all the bears, and that can't happen. And you got to get over that and move on to the fact to what you can get done.
After the first time a bear killed one of his livestock, Slatt received funding from various nonprofits and government agencies for a roughly $17,000 six-wire electric fence around his calving lot. He's funded more electric fencing himself and installed shipping containers to lock up grain and minerals.
Because the bears did tear all the wooden doors off of all of our storage bins that we had.
Slatt was an early adopter of some of these tools, and over time, his neighbors took notice. He says local conservation group Blackfoot Challenge has been key in getting ranchers to the table. Executive Director Seth Wilson says a majority of ranchers here are using the nonprofit's help to pay for things like electric fences, and conflicts have gone down.
We documented a 75% reduction from 2003 to 2012. Last year we had a bump up of conflicts. And bears show us where we need to continue to do more work. And so we continue to face that sort of challenge, and we'll do that.
While the landscape and the specific mitigation tools needed on the Rocky Mountain front may be different, Trina Bradley says that's the kind of success she is shooting for.
We can work together similarly on the front, maybe not set up something like the Blackfoot Challenge, but we can work together like that in order to figure this out together.
Bradley says buy-in will take time, but she's hoping, like the Blackfoot Valley, neighbors of early adopters will take notice, and word of mouth will do the rest of the work. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.